Hello, 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 and welcome to My Empty Hands, a podcast about the martial arts, typically with a focus on Kenpo. As always, I am Reggie Darden, and I've got another wonderful guest with me today, Mr. Micah Klusman, and I probably butchered it, but I always have problems with people's names. I don't know why. I get nervous and butcher it there, but we will continue on here and find out about his journey in Kenpo and in the martial arts, and we'll get on to whatever other items that we might happen to get onto. I usually start things off with just saying that I am training in multiple martial arts at this point. I don't know, I think the listeners have heard me blabber on about that a million times, so we'll just we'll just move right on and get into our guest story here. So how did Kenpo find you? Where did it all start? And we'll kind of go from there.
Okay, well, let's see. I guess the best place to start is always at the beginning. Back in about 2006 or so, I was kind of looking for something that would give me an opportunity to train or to at least be active for all year round. I had done some, you know, some recreational softball and a little bit of volleyball here and there. But obviously those were timed, if you will, across certain seasons. And one of the things that I was really interested in, especially since, you know, as a kid, I used to watch all of the Chinese Kung Fu movies and whatnot. I said to myself, okay, you know, this is an opportunity for me to look into martial arts. So I had moved out from upstate New York back in 2001, and for about 5 years or so, I lived out here in Colorado, and I said, okay, I think now's about the time. So I looked up my local martial arts studio, it happened to be a Kenpo school, and I told myself, oh, maybe this might be worth trying out. Now, at the time, my five-year-old oldest son was kind of, you know, he was rambunctious. He was a five-year-old. And my wife and I were thinking about, okay, what could we get him involved in that would allow him to grow and to learn and to be able to be active? So I said, well, maybe he should try doing the martial arts too. So it was kind of like a father and son kind of situation. So we went down to the studio and got signed up. And I was thinking to myself, I'm not sure. We'll see how this goes. Here I am, I'm, you know, in my mid-30s at this point. My youngest son is five here. And basically, he started to enjoy it, and so did I. And to the point where I said to myself, I think this is something that I want to do long-term. Not just sort of a, you know, see about getting my black belt and be done, but see what I can do with this as an art for many years to come. So really, that's kind of how things got started. And I've been doing it ever since. So, you know, I'm coming up on 20 years, and I've, you know, we'll probably talk a little bit about it more, but I've also dabbled in some other martial arts as well. So, but that's how my Kenpo career got started.
Very nice. Very nice. Now, as far as the Kenpo school, what kind of a branch lineage is that under?
So it was kind of a blend. It did have a bit of the Larry Tatum lineage in it, but it was also tied to a variety of schools sort of in as a alliance within the Colorado area that did more of they branched off of the American Kenpo, and they did something what they called international Kenpo, and they tried to build in a little bit of jujitsu into it. So it was very much like American Kenpo, but there were some variations here and there. And that's kind of how I got started. But we did follow, if you were to find a lineage that was closest to what we did, mostly Larry Tatum's lineage.
Okay, very nice, very nice. My current instructor, he got his third and fourth from Larry Tatum. So we are we're brothers in arms there. I guess you could say. Very nice, very nice. So you mentioned that you dabbled in some other systems. What were those?
So one of the interesting things about this particular Kenpo school here in the Loveland, Colorado area was the fact that the instructor had done a variety of martial arts, and in particular, Doce Pares, which is a Filipino martial arts. So one of the things that came along shortly after I started, maybe, oh, I don't know, I was probably an orange belt back in the day. And he had asked myself and a couple other students who seemed to have a proclivity to branching out and being able to do other things. He asked us if we were interested in attending a seminar regarding Doce Pares. And of course, you know, as an orange belt, I'm like, sure, why not? You know, it'll be interesting to see what other people do. So three of us went down to Boulder, Colorado, where the seminar was being given. This was back in the day when Senior Grandmaster Juni Kenyette was still alive. And he gave a couple-hour seminar, and I was hooked. I was like, wow, this is really cool. An opportunity to use weapons, use sticks and knives, and to learn another martial art and seeing all the things that we could do with that. And one of the things that was really exciting was the fact that there's a sport complement to this. So as we were coming back from Boulder, my instructor asked us in the car, so are any of you guys interested in potentially doing some stick fighting? Now, I was a little scared about that at first. I'm like, okay, what does this really involve? And, you know, is this going to hurt? So to speak, I'd seen a couple of pictures and a brief little video, and I'm like, you know, let's give it a try. Worst come to worst, I try it. I can say, hey, I tried it. I didn't like it, whatnot. And so we started training, and we trained for the 2007 Colorado Regionals, at which point I was selected to be able to represent for the U.S. Nationals, which happened to be in Walnut, California back in the day. That was in 2008. And I ended up taking a position where I was on the USA team, which I thought was absolutely phenomenal. And I absolutely enjoyed getting an opportunity to participate in this stick fighting sport. In the end, I call it my anger management class because it's an opportunity to sort of hit people, but yet to learn how to do so effectively, but yet safely. But in any event, I had an opportunity to represent on the world stage in 2008 for Doce Pares for stick fighting. So I got a chance to go to the Philippines and competed. And I ended up spending 3 weeks over there in the Philippines. There was a week for the tournaments. There was a week for training with the masters and the grandmasters over there. And then since I was already halfway around the world, I figured I should take a week for a vacation and actually do absolutely nothing. So needless to say, I had an absolutely great time. And from that point, when I went down to that seminar, I've been doing the stick fighting as well as Doce Pares alongside my Kenpo, even to this day.
Very nice, very nice. That's one of the things that I've always found with the kind of what the weapons arts, the stick arts and stuff like that. It's it is a bit tougher to use those skills and get to kind of test your mettle without beating the crap out of your training partner. So,
right.
It's pretty cool that you have a option to be able to compete and use those skills as close to real world as you can get. So it's pretty wild.
It is. And, you know, I've been very fortunate that I've had multiple opportunities to be a national champion, to go to the world stage and be able to compete. I coached for a number of years as well to see to ha sort of be an ambassador for others to say, hey, you know, here's something that is a very niche kind of idea. Here is something where you can set yourself apart from 99% or more of the world's population of something that people don't even think about, they don't even know. And you can actually do very well as part of a competition and get an opportunity to see where you stack up and how things work. So I find this to be very exciting. And after my coaching stint that I did for about 10 years, I've gotten back into fighting. So I'm looking forward to this 2025, 2026 season. And I'm looking to get back to being on the USA team, hopefully, come for July, where Worlds will be in Romania.
Ooh, very exciting. Very exciting. So to take it back to the Kempo side of things, that first school was there a particular reason why you chose that school, or is it just the right fit, or was there something else that drove you to that particular school?
Well, one of the things for sure was the fact that it was actually close to where I live. So proximity was a big key because that way I knew that especially during the winter times, yeah, I could kind of get myself to go the 10 minutes to the school so that I could actually train and whatnot, as opposed to having to drive potentially 30 or 40 minutes to get to any of the other schools. There aren't a whole lot of karate schools in the northern Colorado area. And many of them are all under the same umbrella. So that's actually kind of nice from the fact that if I wanted to train at one of the other schools that are affiliated in this alliance, I could do so. I could go to the Fort Collins, or I could even go to the Greeley School, which is a little bit further east, about 30 minutes east.
Okay. Very nice. Very nice. Now you said that you were training with your son. Is your son also still involved, or has he moved on to other things?
He's moved on to other things. He did earn his black belt, which was good. He actually started, as I said, mentioned, he started when he was about five. So he ended up working his way through his junior black belt. And then he finished up as an adult black belt. And my daughter and my youngest son, because I have three kids, they did the same. So one of the things I'm very proud of my children is, if you will, sticking with it and actually going through the entire process. Because I think it's one of those things where it shows a lot of determination and it shows a lot of character.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Was it something that was it a requirement for them to stick it out, or did they choose to stick it out?
So it wasn't a requirement. I didn't want to sort of force it on them, especially since I was so gung-ho, if you will, about being involved with Kempo. But I did enjoy the fact that they chose to go to earn their black belt for the purpose of being able to say, okay, I know something a little bit about how to defend myself. And in particular for my daughter, to that, especially in today's age where it's very scary out there in the real world. I'm glad that my daughter did earn her black belt. And she continues to go every so often for refreshers for women's self-defense and whatnot because of today's society.
Very nice. Very nice. Very nice. So getting back to the competing side of it, so you did it with the Kali Arnis world. How about in the Kenpo world? Do any competing in on that side?
No, actually, surprisingly not, I didn't. I haven't gone to any of the karate competitions or the kumite style competitions. I focused more on the dose paras for the fighting side.
Gotcha. Any particular reason why?
I think it just didn't align with how I was training, at least at the time, for the stick fighting. And the stick fighting, not to say that it's any more or less competitive or demanding, but I, for all intents and purposes, the stick fighting was more than enough, if you will, for me at that time, and even to this day, for the purpose of being able to compete, to work on exercise, to see where I stand, and to continue to evolve in how well I can do.
Gotcha. Now, as a cross trainer, do you find, I've always felt that Kenpo is a great base for connecting with other arts, even ones that are not very similar to Kenpo. So, in my journeys, I do a number of martial arts. And I found that Kenpo fits really well in all of them, and some of them are very vastly different than Kenpo is. So I'm curious, has the Kenpo training also helped with the other arts that you've been involved with?
Absolutely. And one of the things that I would say is, at least from the Filipino martial arts, and I'll talk specifically from the Dos Espadas, they are synergistic with each other. Kenpo, I find that my Kenpo and my Filipino martial arts work very well together. And I've even found that in some of my Krav Maga, that I kind of slip back into Kenpo because I find myself in similar, if you will, reference points from the Krav Maga that allow me to exercise my Kenpo skills. So I do agree that Kenpo provides a fantastic base for allowing individuals to be able to cross train and to see how they fit together. Because as we all do, and I'm sure you would do the same, we're looking to be as well-rounded as possible. And in doing so, by allowing other arts to come in and to play with what we already know, helps us to get to that well-roundedness.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. Now, so since you mentioned it, so you've trained in Krav Maga, and how did that come about, and what's that been training been like?
So I did some Krav Maga started about 3 years ago. Actually, I was looking for something to augment what I did in terms of my Dos Separas, in terms of exercise. And I said, well, let me look into Krav Maga. There was a school here in Fort Collins, about 15 minutes north of me, and it turns out that it works really well. With the fact that there are pieces in there that are very relatable to Kenpo. And with my Kenpo skills, it gives me that opportunity to say, oh, okay, I can see how in a combative martial arts like Krav Maga is, I can see where this is maybe a little bit more modern for the street, but I can also then flow into and flow out of Kenpo as I see the situation unfold. And that, I think, was a very important piece for myself, especially with individuals who may start with a particular martial art, and that's where they stay in that lane. And in particular in Krav, where that's what they see. They only know Krav Maga at that point. Whereas I'm able to assimilate some of these other arts like Krav Maga into my base knowledge of Kenpo.
Gotcha. So we've got the Dos Epades, we've got the Kenpo, we've got the Krav Maga. Any other arts you've been involved with?
No, unfortunately, I just don't have enough time because I do have my regular 9-to-5 job that I do. So finding time is like one of those things where if I could bottle what I have, I'd love to have used it. And in some sense, I think to myself, if I only had started a little bit sooner in my life, I may have been able to do a little bit more. But I'm very blessed with what I'm able to do now. So I take that as a good thing.
Yeah, no, I can definitely relate with multiple martial arts, 9 to 5, the wife, the dogs, and a podcast. Yeah, it's hard to find time for it all, and make do as best we can. So
absolutely, absolutely.
Very nice. Now, are there any arts that you would like to get involved with that maybe if you could? If we could add another day to the week, extra day after Sunday, is there any other arts that maybe you'd like to get involved with?
You know, one of the things that I would love to be able to find time for would be doing some sort of jiu-jitsu, whether it be Brazilian jiu-jitsu or Gracie jiu-jitsu. I think it would be a great complement from the fact that as Kenpo, as a stand-up striking art, and with Filipino martial arts as a weapons-based system and being able to employ some ground aspect to that, I think would help to round out the entire set of what happens if. And then you, sort of as a Mad Libs, you could kind of fill in those blanks based on whether I need to fill in Kenpo, whether I need to fill in weapon work, whether I need to fill in groundwork. And to be able to have all of that would be, I think, phenomenal. I just don't have the time to be able to fill in something additional at this time.
Gotcha. Yeah, as a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu practitioner, I can definitely attest to being able to use the Kenpo principles within the Jiu-Jitsu while rolling around and trying not to get choked out. I'm thinking like, okay, well, this Kenpo principle works good with this particular technique or how to get out of this technique or how to make a choke or a submission of some sort work better. So yeah, the jiu-jitsu part of it goes back to the having that Kenpo base really enhances I think the techniques of the other arts. So
absolutely. And I think that was part of why, I looked into and have been working with the Krav Maga is to try to fill in some of those gaps, even though it's not specifically jiu-jitsu. It does have a little bit of what happens if things go to the ground kind of idea. So there is those places where we try to patchwork those, I don't want to call them deficiencies, but places that we'd like to shore up better in our well-rounded martial arts career.
That's it. So let's move over to the teaching side of it. When did you get involved into teaching, and was that something that you were always interested in, something you always wanted to do, or like many of my guests, it was thrust upon you? And,
that's actually really interesting. Sort of to give a little bit of context for this, I have a PhD in experimental particle physics. So I've gotten to the point where I feel very comfortable being able to teach. And I actually did a fair amount of teaching in the academic side while I was getting my PhD. And I've done tutoring and various other things. So it was all very natural to sort of see that as a step forward. Now, when it came to martial arts, my instructor, when I was, I think it was a green belt, asked me if I would be interested in working with the little kids, what we call the tiger or the tigers and dragons. And I said, sure, I'd love to, sort of learn how to teach in martial arts because of the fact that, okay, you have a group of students and you're trying to make sure everybody's learning at a decent pace for them, what they're able to learn. So that's kind of where things got started. And I just kept progressing from there. And pretty much since that time, in one way, shape, or form, whether it was teaching in Kenpo or if it was teaching in live stick fighting, I've been doing that all the way until about 2 years ago or so. And then I took a little break And then just this year, I said, I kind of miss it. I really do enjoy being able to share what I've learned with others that are interested in learning about martial arts, and in particular, Kenpo and Filipino martial arts. So I decided, and my wife and I kind of talked about it, and we said, I think it's about time that I open up a school. So I have my own little school here. I teach out of my garage, but it's one of these things where I'm like, this is an opportunity for me to get back into teaching and to be able to, as I mentioned earlier, to pay it forward, share what I know because someone was kind enough to share those little extra bits with me. How can I give that to somebody else?
Very nice, very nice. I like that. Is what has there been any changes in the way that you teach now versus early on? Maybe any kind of tips you would give yourself, or things that you would do differently?
One of the things that I've decided to do differently sort of now is the fact that I sort of work at the private client level. So I realize that when you work with a large group of students, it can be hard to give enough attention to everybody just because just because of the sheer numbers. And with that said, one of the things that I really want to be able to do is to give individualized attention to those people who are serious about working in the martial arts and learning the martial arts. So working through this private clients model has helped me to focus on, okay, what is it about this individual and how they learn so that I can maximize how to get information across and for them to feel that they are making good progress as part of their journey. Because in some sense, we're walking this journey together. And I'm that person that's hopefully helping them to see the path while they're helping me learn how to show them the path. So I think it's fine. I find that it works both ways. Not only are they teaching me, but I'm teaching them.
Very nice, very nice. So, kind of I guess a kind of a adjacent to the teaching aspect. Recently, I was part of or in witness of a conversation about what it means to be a black belt, and it got me thinking because it was brought up that there is no standard for there is no kind of standard definition, standard answer of what it means to be a black belt, what it means to earn a black belt, how long it should take to get a black belt, that sort of thing. So I decided that I wanted to start asking guests to what their interpretation of what it means to be a black belt, and there's of course, no right or wrong answers, but I'm curious what your thoughts are, what your feedback is about what it means to be a black belt, what it means to earn a black belt.
So, and that's actually a great question, especially from the fact that, you're right. You're going to see lots of variations in what's considered to be material that needs to be understood, the time that it takes, and so on. So, for me, being able to practice how martial arts can change your life. Both while you're as a student, but also as part of your real life outside of the studio or outside of the dojo. One of the things that I talk about from the past and from my previous instructor was the fact that he talks about taking pride in what you do. And I was like, okay. I can understand that you obviously want to give it your all. You want to do the best that you can. And that's all that anybody ever really asks is to do the best that you can. We've always got stuff to learn, and we always have lots and lots of stuff to learn, even if it's just a matter of getting better at what we already know. But he actually went one step further and said, pride is a very interesting word because the P, the letter P in pride, stands for perseverance, to understand that there are going to be times when things are hard, and to be able to work through those and be able to see how you can surmount those hills that may be put in your path. In addition, he said that R in pride represents respect. Respect for yourself, respect for your peers, respect for your teachers, respect for people around you. And in doing so, you take that what you learn in the school, in the dojo, and you bring it into the real world. And it helps you to become a better person. The I in pride, he said, was for integrity. Basically, to know the difference between right and wrong, but to know that doing the right thing doesn't always have to be around anybody for anybody to see. It's to know that what you do should be the way that you behave in the real world. And then the D in pride was discipline. To know that you have to be able to say it's not just a mindset to say that I want to be able to do X, Y, or Z, whether it's martial arts or whether it's something else outside of martial arts, but to see how you can do that and to push yourself and give yourself that opportunity to make that happen. And then, of course, the last letter in pride, E, is the effort that you give. A lot of people, they want to do the minimal effort. And you can give the minimal effort in a lot of different things. It's those people who are willing to give the effort that's necessary and to go a little beyond that will gain the biggest benefits. And to be able to see how that translates into what you do every day. So pride is a very special word in the fact that it encompasses a lot of different pieces into what it's intended to mean. And I try to give that as a metaphor, if you will, to everybody that I get an opportunity to work with, in the fact that what we do is for you to become a better person.
Yeah, I like that. I like that it's very encompassing of kind of individual goals and not so much focused on, oh well, you know these 154 techniques and you can do them at this certain proficiency, and it's more about building that internal side. Because we're not all built the same, and we don't all have the same abilities, but that doesn't lessen one person's accomplishments or achievements versus another. It's I feel that that black belt journey is very individual one, and not so much a checklist of different things. So.
Absolutely correct. And that's, I think, what really separates a black belt from somebody who studies in a martial art is that their willingness to see where does my journey take me? Because everybody's journey is different.
Exactly. So, since you've been involved in the arts for a while now, I'm curious what your thoughts are on the future of Kenpo. Where do you see it heading? Where would you like to see it head? And maybe in contrast to how your journey has been over the years, or there may be things that you've done in training that you don't do anymore that maybe you wish would come back, or things that we do now that you wish you would have had when you started your training, anything like that.
So I think one of the things that I've come to, if you will, get excited about again was the fact that, and as a student of Master Jamie Seabrook's, this opportunity to understand and to sort of deep dive at times regarding information about what Kenpo holds. I mean, we could all go back and say, well, Senior Grandmaster Ed Parker basically did not want Kenpo to be traditionalized because he wants that to be tailored for every individual. And I firmly believe that one person's Kenpo can be slightly different than another person's Kenpo because that's how we tailor it to ourselves rather than forcing ourselves to be the same as the art. And one of the things that I think helps that is the fact that certain, at least as part of my journey, there were things where we went through the process of, okay, we've got, these techniques that have to be understood. We practice them. We may put them on the body, for example, so that we get an opportunity to see how the body reacts. And we go through a level of proficiency as we go through and test for maybe our next belt or to become more proficient with that particular technique. However, I think one of the things that I missed out on, at least in the beginning of my career, which thankfully I've had an opportunity to rectify, is to become better at understanding what we're doing and why. I think the why turns out to be one of those places where we don't always get enough information to sort of internalize and better understand what the technique is trying to teach us. And I see this not just in martial arts. I've seen this in a variety of other aspects, whether it's in academia, whether it's in tutoring, whether it's, my kids went through this in high school where they learn how to do something and they go through the practice problems or whatnot, but they don't really understand the why they have to, why are they being asked to remember how to do this and what's its purpose beyond just what's being told at the teach from the teacher. So, sparring is a great example for this. There are a number of schools, and in particular the school that I started with, where sparring was a requirement. We really wanted to have that opportunity to practice some of what we work on so that you can see how it actually works in a more fluid situation. One of the other schools that I ended up moving to sometime in the mid-2010s, sparring was kind of a secondary thought. It wasn't really a whole lot of sparring, and there was a lot of air Kenpo. So there's some parts that you can learn in process of doing some air Kenpo, but there's not enough. You have to see it with a person. You have to be able to understand how the body works. You have to get this impression of why this technique is where it is in the system or why it's even in the system. What is it trying to teach us? So those are some of the things that I've been reacquainted with over the last few years, and it has for me helped to deepen how I see Kenpo as well as how I give information and to be able to interact with my students with Kenpo.
Yeah, I definitely think there needs to be more of the understanding of the why and not just the how. I've trained with a lot of different people over the years, and it's always curious to me when there's people so there's that joke about how many Kenpoists does it take to change a light bulb, and it's always curious and funny to me that Ed Parker was known for bucking the trend, being outside of the tradition, and that sort of thing, but yet so many people in the Kenpo world are like, oh well, that's not the way Ed Parker would do it, and the whole kind of point is to be different, at least from my perspective. And it's funny that there are so many people in the art that want to keep things locked in a certain way. And, you know, of course, you know, not completely changing the system, but there's so many people that are resistant to modifying the system or making it their own. And it's just kind of curious to me that they're using this person as an example of not changing, when a big part of why they are who they are is because they did change. So it's kind of a weird, not sure the word, I guess, ironic that there's so many people that are kind of tied to the quote unquote tradition of Kenpo and not kind of moving and evolving.
Well, you know, Ed Parker gave us a blueprint. He gave us a template of what Kenpo is. And his whole, and I firmly believe this, although I've never had an opportunity to, you know, to train with him, obviously, seeing that it's been 30 some years since his passing. The ability to take the blueprint and to take that template that he provided was his gift to all of us who practice in Kenpo, to help make it unique to each one of us. And there's a certain amount of, if you will, base that everybody basically does. And I think that's good. But the ability to have those little pieces that make it truly your own is what makes Kenpo as a martial art stand apart from all others.
I agree. Very nice. All right, so we are going to move into our lightning round here as we head towards wrapping up our time here. So I've got a few little questions here to throw at you, and okay. We'll see what we got here. So the first question being, do you have a favorite technique?
I guess my favorite technique would probably be five swords, like most of everybody else.
Yeah, that's one of the, as I like to call them, the Kenpo All-Stars, the techniques that you see in just about every version of Kenpo out there. Five swords, your thundering hammers, snapping twig, things like that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, those are the go-tos. So very nice, very nice. All right, next question. Do you have a favorite form and or set?
So my favorite form, I guess, would be long seven, only because of the fact that I have such a proclivity and such an excitement about using weapons, in particular from my Doce Pares Filipino martial arts, that form seven for me is my opportunity to see how can I really understand the melding of Kenpo with Arnis and Kali.
Very nice, very nice. I've recently got my first exposure to trying to get through that form, and it's like, I still got a long way to go, but it's very nice, and a lot of work and getting that brain and body movements to gel and work together. But yeah, I guess once I get down to the point where I can work on it on a regular basis, then it'll probably get easy for me at some point. But it was a pretty smoke coming out of the ears moment trying to get that. So very nice. I like it. All right. I think I kind of know the answer to this next question, but we'll ask it anyway. Do you have a favorite weapon?
Oh, well, it would have to be a stick.
Shocker. Shocker. So, yeah, no, that's very, very, very well, very well put there. I like that. All right. So the next question, if there is anyone that you could train with, living or dead, fictional or non-fictional, besides Ed Parker, who would that be?
Ooh. That's an interesting question. I've had an opportunity to do, seminars with some, well-renowned people. Jeff Speakman for one, Paul Mills as another. Rest in peace for that. For me, if I were able to go back in time, if you will, I would love to learn from Chuck Sullivan.
Oh yes, very nice. Yeah, he's one of the greats for sure. yeah, I recently had the opportunity to meet him for the first time and get a little instruction from him. So that was pretty nice. And yeah, I would definitely love to be able to train with him in his prime, so to speak, and even kind of adjacent time periods to that as well. So I like that. Like that. All right. The last question there. What is something that always motivates you to train, always gets you to train? So I use the example of the movie Rocky IV. When he's doing his thing in the snow and chopping the wood and the music is going, I see that scene and I'm ready to go hit the mats and get training. So, what is something that always motivates you to train?
I would say now, in today, the biggest motivation for me to train is to see my students be better. So I look at it from the point of view of I've had a great opportunity, and I've seized that opportunity over the last nearly 20 years. I want to continue utilizing that opportunity. And the way that I can do that in addition to training for myself is to be able to train so that I can teach others.
I like it. I like it. That's a good one. All right. So now we're at our final portion here, and that is shameless self-promotion. So you can plug anything that you'd like, or if there's anything that you wanted to say that we hadn't covered today, you now have the floor and say whatever you like, and then we will close out from there.
I guess, obviously I could do the shameless plug from the fact that, as a live stick fighter, one of the biggest draws that I have for being involved with that is the fact of family, ohana, if you will. And even though it is such a niche art and a not even an art, but as a component of Filipino martial arts, I find that we actually, as practitioners, we have a little badge that we wear, a patch that says Unifying FMA. And that's one of the things that I wholeheartedly believe in the fact of Filipino martial arts and martial arts in general, is the fact that this is an opportunity for all practitioners to learn and to be part of a family. And that family is our connection with not just the past, but also with the future and who we work with, who we train with, who we train as teachers. And I just hope to see that continue to grow.
Very nice, very nice. Well, I thank you so much for taking the time to be on with me and sharing your story. And you are, of course, welcome back anytime, and we'll follow what you're doing in the future, and hope we can have you on again to talk about some more topics. But once again, I just thank you for being on and sharing your story.
Well, thank you, Mr. Darden. I really appreciate you giving me a time to talk about, all the things that I've had an opportunity to do, and hopefully still have an opportunity of things to come.
Very nice, very nice. Well, thank you again, and can't wait to get this out for the listeners to hear.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkenpo.com. Thank you.